Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's time for Center Stage. Thank you so much for joining us and sticking and staying right here on WCCO. It's that hour where we talk about the arts and entertainment, and we think you ought to know about all the great shows that are happening, like Flowers for the Room through March 3rd at Yellow Tree Theater. How about Potted Parter Tuesday through March 3rd at the Pantages? Holiday Inn till February 23rd at the Chanhassen. Mr. Popper's Penguins through February 24th at the Children's Theater. We could go on and on and on, but we do have some guests that we need to talk to as well. Well, the 30th season of the Youth Performance Company is underway, and Friday night they opened a new show called Periphery. It deals with student sit-ins during the 1960s, and here to talk about it is Derek Duck Washington. Welcome to CCO, Derek.
Thank you for having me.
You know, we got to start with how come you called Duck?
So, as a youth, I used to work for a zoo in Lansing, Michigan, and it kind of ties into that, but it's a little bit of a long story. let's just say that me and animals go together. So now people call me Duck.
Okay, we'll take it to mean that this opens February. It's been open. Periphery's been open since February 8th, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, we, because of the all of the heavy snow, we actually ended up not having any schools to perform for on Friday. Mm-hmm. So we technically opened last night.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about Periphery.
So Periphery is specifically about the Greensboro sit-ins that happened in 1960 in Greensboro, North Carolina, where four amazingly strong and brave young black students decided that they had had enough of segregation and decided to sit at the whites-only section of the lunch counter in an F.W. Woolworth's store. And that kind of launched what we now regard as the larger sit-in movement of the civil rights era, and inspired a lot of the nonviolent protests that we've seen throughout the decades.
It was a radical move, in fact. I learned a lot about this, was living in Gary, Indiana, when this was all happening. And it really is quite remarkable how quiet this story has gotten. We really don't hear about it until Black History Month or Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday or something like that. Do you feel that we are not talking enough about it to make sure that we continue to teach children of all colors about this, as well as adults, to remind them that this actually happened in our country?
Well, I think it's really, really important to put as much stress over the accomplishments and the history of the civil rights movement, just not in February or on Martin Luther King's birthday, but to celebrate it as part of our regular curriculum as well. Mm-hmm. But I think right now there are lots of issues and challenges that we face as a society, students need to learn that these are tools that they can use, that they have voices and bodies that can speak up against the things they see in the world that are not right, whether they be race issues or other things.
You know, it's a time to really talk about this because, of course, after Parkland, it was organized. These teenagers really got out there and organized and had the big teen walk that was millions of them across the country. And then to know that they're continuing that fight, you know, they're voting now, they're talking about the injustices. And as we look at a show like this, do you feel as though something, knowing if you introduce this story again, which is what you're doing, into the conversation of the country as well as the great state of Minnesota, that this is something people will understand can be successful because it was before? Is this something that we should look to do again?
I think so. I think it reads pretty clear when I look at the faces and hear the passion in the young people who are involved in the show, as they learn more about the history of what happened and how four students were able to take one action and have it inspire a whole country, that their city in particular would spread across more than 50 cities across the southern United States and really change the way we looked at segregation throughout North America. The idea that just one individual or a small group of individuals can enact such change is really inspiring to them.
And what would you say to those who say, oh, look, we have triumphed, we have you know, we've integrated. There isn't that type of segregation anymore. Why do we need to keep talking about this? The youth of Parkland, they're out there marching with color side by side. You know, people from all over the world, people from all the states. These young people are just, they're global citizens. They're talking to one another. They're communicating. They're going to school together. So why do we need to keep dealing with this? This is something new. Let's deal with that. What do you say to them?
Well, I'd say that while like a tremendous amount of progress has been made, I think it's really important to note that inequality in this country is never something that is never going to hit an end point. There's never a victory we won over racism, or we won over prejudice or discrimination. The goal is to make the world better every day, mm-hmm. and to fight so that more people can bring the best of themselves to their daily lives without stress and turmoil. And I don't think that we can justly say that's something that's been achieved. So I think we need to encourage people to continue to fight to make the world the best that we can make it.
Is there a John Lewis character in this piece?
It doesn't speak specifically on any of the specific individuals involved. It more revolves around the kind of the community that was around Greensboro at the time, and how the students' sit-in impacted them, whether it inspired them to become involved, or whether it forced them to make a change because the culture around their world was changing.
Any talkbacks after that then? Are you guys having talkbacks to talk about what has changed now in Greensboro?
It does focus quite more specifically on the period of time in the 60s. But we do reflect on it as a testament to the power of the student voice. If you come into the theater, we have photos up on the walls from different periods in history where student protests have made an impact, whether it be in the Vietnam War or the Parkland shooting student movements or at Kent State, all kinds of different examples of that. And we really try to encourage the students to know that what these students did is something that they can do. We don't necessarily look at like, hey, this is where Greensboro is at now. But we talk about the effects of the movement and how it spread out across the country, mm-hmm. and how it made a difference in that light.
Okay, this is by Ed Simpson. Did he, use the N-word in this particular piece?
There is one singular usage of that word within the course of the play, and we actually had a few discussions about that through the rehearsal process, knowing that it's such a harsh and charged word.
It's the most vile word in the English language, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I would agree with you. But we wanted to make sure that we were trying to bring some honesty to the situations that wrapped around the history of what was going on. In this actual play, the word is actually used by an African American character in response to talking about how the students were told to not react if someone were to call them that word. But I do think it's important that the word is there and is definitely not taken lightly.
Now, this show is recommended for fourth graders and up. The themes are courage, civil rights, segregation, and U.S. history, student activism, and then citizenship. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of our main goals is to try to is to encourage students to be active citizens within their community, to get involved and speak out when they don't think something is right. One of the interesting things that I learned researching into the project was that these four young men said, we didn't want anybody over 18 to be involved because we figured that they'd had their chance and they hadn't enacted any change. So it really recognizes the power of youthful ideas. And I think it's really important that we embrace that, not only that their voices are important, because student voices have enacted so much change over the last 50 years in our country, or more so. But also we need to make sure that we're nurturing and supporting environments where they can safely bring their voices to the table.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is happening at the Howard Kahn Fine Arts Center. Is that over by Plymouth Congregational?
It is right in the church building there.
Oh.
There's a 300 seat
theater
right
there.
Yes, it's
right a great
there,
theater.
Which
and
is
that's,
Howard
yeah,
Kahn,
that's right located at 1900. And, yeah, go ahead. Franklin and
right at Franklin and Nicollet there.
Okay, Howard Kahn Fine Arts Center inside of Plymouth Congregational Church. And again, this is playing until the 24th of February. If people want tickets, where do they go?
I would say the best place to go is to youthperformanceco.org, mm-hmm. Or they can call 612-623-9080.
And we appreciate you keeping this as affordable as possible for young people. Do you have one of those pay as you come or pay what you can sort of days?
We don't have a pay what you can day, but we do have special student rates and we have group rates available as well.
All right. We appreciate you joining us tonight, Duck. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Best name yet. Oh, man. I'm so having a good time with that. Derek Duck Washington is his name and him. The show deals with student sit-ins in the 1960s and so much more. It's Periphery. And again, it's happening at the Howard Kahn. I want to make sure I get this straight. Howard Kahn Fine Arts Center at 1900 Nicollet Avenue in Minneapolis, and it's inside of Plymouth Congregational Church, so you don't want to miss that. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back with our friend, lead theater critic over at the Star Tribune, Rohan Preston, in just a moment. It is now 9:21, and it's time to visit with our favorite lead theater critic over at the Star Tribune, Rohan Preston. How you doing, my friend?
I'm well. How are you?
We've missed you. Doing well, doing well. I understand that you had a chance to go over and check out Antigone at Park Square.
I did. It's an all-female version of Antigone and adapted and performed by this young company. And it's interesting. There are some really good parts of it. There are some parts that are not as successful. It has music. It's very clear and very well told, and I think it'll do really well with students.
Yeah. I had a chance to interview Lauren about this, and I was so excited that it was an all-female. You and I have talked about, the genesis of theater and how it was all men that were playing all of the roles, and here they've turned that upside down.
Yeah.
It's just great.
Yeah, which is I think, is a very, very good thing. It's a part of a good trend, and there's been like an all-female Julius Caesar and other shows like that. And we have some artists who practice original practices as well, which is mostly men in all the roles. This is a great way of providing female talent, women actors and directors and so on with opportunities, and that's a wonderful thing.
Well, it's incredible. And of course, Antigone plays through March 3rd. It's happening now through March 3rd at Park Square Theater. If you want tickets, all you have to do is go to Park Square Theater with a T-R-E at the end of that, parksquaretheater.org. All right. I understand that you also went to see Stewardess. And I was going to talk about that earlier tonight, at least mention that they're playing through March 3rd at the History Theater. Tell us more.
Yes. So this is a show about Mary Pat Laffey, who basically sued Northwest Airlines. She worked with Northwest from the 50s into the 80s, sued Northwest and for equal pay for women, for flight attendants. And the play is written by Kira Obolensky, and Mary Pat is played by Tracy Maloney, directed by Noel Raymond. It's really quite special. A lot of jaw-dropping moments in it. Some of that from the kind of rampant sexism in the olden days, and some of that really from the performances. Wonderful, wonderful performances in the show.
Okay, so the title, is the full title just Stewardess, or is it Real Women, Real Stories?
Stewardess with an exclamation point.
Ah, there you go.
Remember, before they were called flight attendants, they were called stewardess.
That's right. I will never forget. It took me a while to get it straight, by the way. That's been in our lifetime, right?
It is, yeah. I mean, it's a really important point because this is, you see how far we have come, but you also hear echoes of some of the reasons, for example, why women were not paid. There are men justifying women not being paid equal pay because allegedly they don't have to take care of families like men do. I mean, so it's actually jaw-dropping in many, many ways because the discrimination is so clear and rampant. So what I think is really good about the show is that it's performed in an honest way without much irony, so that you're hearing it as people really believed, and you also hear echoes of some of those arguments today.
Is it proof that we haven't come a long way?
No, I think I think we have come a long way. I think we have a ways to go.
Aw, look at that. You are good, my friend. You are good, dude.
But I think it's true. You know, we have come a ways. We have. And there's yet a ways to go. It's really, I mean, it's actually pretty startling, some of the things that used to happen.
You know? So true. And if
in
you
the
want
workplace.
Yeah, in the workplace, that's still happening today. We want to let you know that you can get tickets to go and see Stewardess! At the History Theater. Just go to History Theater with a T-R-E.com. HistoryTheater.com. Now, you know we got to talk about the Lab Theater. I was pretty excited about the Minnesota Opera getting involved and buying that space. I was really excited about this story.
Yeah, I think it's a win. Definitely win for the Twin Cities arts community. It's also a win for that neighborhood. The news, of course, is the Minnesota Opera has bought the former Guthrie Lab, now the Lab Theater. And Mary Kelly Lear, who has booked the Lab Theater since 2006,
right,
will continue to book it for the next through 2020. And we'll see what happens after that. Of course, she has a big birthday coming up then, so she may retire. But she's
her retire, not going to happen, dear. Not going to happen.
But she's been an integral part of this community and booking, you know, Ruby's Cabaret and doing really, really wonderful work. So it keeps it in the performing arts family, and it's the news comes at a time when lots of other venues have gone the way of the dodo. You have Intermediate Arts went down last year.
Right. Broke my heart, by the way. Broke my heart.
Yes. And the Soap Factory. So there are other things that are going away, and so this is a bit of good news for the Twin Cities arts and culture community, and good news also for the neighborhood, because people want more culture in the North Loop of Minneapolis, where this is located.
Exactly. Now let's talk a little bit about Senator Amy Klobuchar jumping into the fray for president of 2020. And immediately I thought there are going to be plays written about her. She is a unique individual. Some people think she's not known enough, but my in-studio producer and I were talking tonight, and I think it's true that she is well-known enough, a quiet, in a very quiet way, but I think we're going to hear a lot more about her. Do you think plays are going to start to be written about her journey, how she got here, where she's going, and how quickly will that happen? Do you think the Brave New Workshop would jump in right away?
Well, I think they may do a comedy, yes. You know, it's always fun and games for the Brave New Workshop. But I do think, I mean, she's a pioneer. She's very, very smart, has a very, very charismatic, has very strong connection to the people of Minnesota. You know, of course, she won re-election by such a wide margin. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I mean, I think, you know, she's, as far as I know, the first woman from Minnesota to run for president, so there's some history making there. It's a wide open field. Lots of people are tossing their hats in the ring. It's actually very interesting to watch, just as a citizen, to see Amy Klobuchar join Elizabeth Warren, join Kamala Harris, join. You know, so many others, and there's an excitement, I think, because there's a sense that this is a watershed moment, and things are opening up, and it's paired actually with the play that we saw this weekend, Stewardess, because things are opening up in new vistas and new directions, and people are taking off, as it were.
Exactly. Well, let me tell you something. I have to mention something that was in the Star Tribune, because I noticed it too. Underneath her caption about her jumping into the fray, the Star Tribune writes, U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar wipes snow from her hair after announcing she is running. Nobody else in this state would have picked outdoors with all the snow and ice we have right now. If this woman can do that, she's all right with me. I'm so excited that she's running.
Very hardy, very tough Minnesotan, and I think there's something about bridging things as well, bridging an island, bridging gaps in the theme. But you're absolutely right. She decided in February. You can guarantee there won't be any good weather for that.
Exactly. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and welcome back, Rohan.
Thank you so much. It's a joy.
All right, there he goes, Rohan Preston from the Star Tribune. If you would like to read any of his critiques, just go to startribune.com/Rohan. That's R-O-H-A-N Preston. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Center Stage, all things arts and entertainment. We just believe you ought to know about it. It is now 9:35. I meant to mention a moment ago when we were talking to Derek Duck Washington about Periphery, I forgot to give you the website. So that website, if you're interested, is Youth Performance Co., youthperformanceco.org. And then just look up Periphery so that you can get your tickets. All right. We have a guest this segment, but I want to mention a few other concerts that are happening. Harmar Superstar, if you don't know who that is, you got to look him up. He has a throng of people that love to follow him. He's Thursday at First Avenue. I can't believe that Insane Clown Posse is coming to the Caboose. Oh, man, really? And then Kelly Clarkson is Saturday at the XL Energy Center. All right. My next guest is Shannon T.L. Kearns. And he is part of the Uprising Theater Company. And they're kicking off a run of shows that discuss one of the big problems in American culture right now, gun violence. Whoa. Everyone stands back and goes, really? Yeah, really. These are the conversations we have to have. So Line of Sight is the first of these shows and is written by artistic director Shannon T.L. Kearns. Hey now, Shannon, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
We sure appreciate it. Okay, how many shows are you doing? How long is this playing?
So we're doing four shows this season, two in this kind of winter-spring area, and then two next fall. Line of Sight is the first of these shows, and it'll run for 3 weekends starting next weekend.
Wow. What is the message you're trying to get out?
Yeah, this first show really looks at kids in schools and the issue of bullying in schools and also school shootings, but also what it's like to find your own power and to figure out what your voice is and how you can stand up for yourself in the midst of a hostile environment.
You know, when you talk about gun violence, many people will try to turn off their radios or throw away the newspaper or turn off their televisions. I mean, it is really that inciting. You know, it really kind of angers people. It starts conversations that could end up with people arguing. And here you are confronting it head on. Tell us how you are approaching gun violence in this first piece.
Yeah, so, you know, what Uprising is really interested in doing is starting conversations. We don't like to do work that's preachy or strident or that only has one answer or solution. And so with all four of these shows, we're looking at the issue of gun violence through a different lens, hoping to really start and inspire conversations. And with this first piece, we're really looking at, you know, what are the things that we can do in our schools to make students safer, to make sure that our students are cared for, that they are, that they're in an environment where they can actually learn and where they're not fearing for their lives. So we're really taking a deep dive into what it's like to be, particularly this show looks at a transgender student in school, what it's like to be a trans kid in school, and how he is both kind of let down by the society around him, but also how he's held up by other parts of it, and really looking to start and inspire conversations.
Very interesting. In fact, Uprising Theater, your season features all women and transgender playwrights, all women directors, and all new work. That's really quite remarkable. And to have four pieces that you're presenting this year, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Line of Sight, is it for everyone to come and see?
I would say this is probably appropriate for about 13 and up. It does deal with some tough topics. There will be no guns seen on stage, and the sound effects are don't come from a gun. So I think that piece will hopefully help folks to be able to enter into it and feel a little bit safer. But it's definitely a show that is for older teenagers and up.
Are you thinking of inviting the students that have actually been through this on some of their high school campuses here in the great state of Minnesota?
We do have a partner called Students Demand Action for Gun Sense who will be present at every show. And they're a nonpartisan teen student-led group that's working on issues of guns in the school. And so they'll be getting the word out and bringing folks from their organization. So we're really excited to be partnering with them as one of our community partners. And so grateful for the work that they're doing and the fact that they'll be present with us.
You also talk in this particular piece about the character Alex and how he is more powerful than he thinks. Tell us a little bit about that supernatural piece, part of this particular piece.
Yeah, there's a little bit of magical realism in it, which has been a new experience for me to write. I'm usually
That's a bold move, by the way, Shannon.
I'm pretty grounded in reality. But I was really struck by there was a news story from a school in Virginia where this transgender student had been left in the hallway during an active shooter drill because all of the lockdown spaces in the school were gendered, and the faculty didn't know what to do with the student, and so they left her in the hallway.
And
I was so struck when I read that news story. I mean, it was around the same time that there was some legislation being passed around trans folks, and I started to think about this idea of invisibility and visibility and how dangerous it can be to be visible as a trans person and especially as a trans student, and started to play with this idea of what might happen if in the midst of a tragic event, magical powers were unlocked that this person didn't know that they had, and that could kind of guide them through a journey of figuring out where they fit in the world. So I don't want to give too much away, but playing with these themes of visibility and invisibility, and how that plays out in our lives, both on a metaphorical level and this really concrete, literal level in schools.
How did this change you writing this piece?
It really, I think, inspired me to be willing to take risks and to do things that were uncomfortable for me, which I think is both a great skill as a playwright and a great challenge as an artist. But also when we're looking at an issue that's so complicated and complex and fraught, like gun violence and like trans issues and trans kids, being able to use my voice in this way and to learn to take risks, it felt really important, and felt like a great challenge and something that I hope to carry forward in my upcoming work.
This is opening on February 15th, and will that be the night that you exhale?
Yes. But once the show is over, hopefully.
You know, it's a soul's work that you do.
Yeah.
Particularly with this particular company. So I wish you well with this. I think it's remarkable that you are addressing this to kick off these four shows. Can you tell us a little bit about the other three?
Sure. So the next show coming up is called The Gun Show by E.M. Lewis. It's a one-person show, and mm-hmm. in it, the artist tells five stories about guns, and it's based on the playwright's own life and true stories, and so it's a really powerful piece. And
no intermission on that piece?
You know, I'm not sure yet.
Okay.
There's no intermission on Line of Sight. I'm not sure about The Gun Show.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the show in September is a piece called Friends with Guns by Stephanie Allison Walker. It's a brand new piece about two couples who meet and become friends and find their relationship challenged by the one couple's views on guns and gun ownership. A really powerful but also funny and touching piece. And then the November...
I got to come and try to see that one, man, because if you can teach us how to start that conversation at a dinner table where we actually survive it, that'd be great.
It's a beautiful new piece. It's part of our show is part of a Rolling World premiere on that piece, so we're really excited to do that. And then November is going to be another new work that's still in development, so not quite ready to announce that, but it's coming.
Well, congratulations to you, Shannon. The Uprising Theater is doing some remarkable work, and I really hope that you get great reviews on this, and I hope that it does exactly what you hope it will do. If people want more information, where do they go?
They can go to our website, which is uprisingtheaterco.com, theater spelled with an R-E, and they can grab tickets and find more about the shows and about the whole season.
And this is through February 15th through March 2nd. Off-Leash Area Art Box is where this is happening, 4200 East 54th. Where is that?
It's in the Nokomis East neighborhood.
It's a
new space. It's beautiful. It's an intimate space that's really flexible in seating and style, and so we're really excited to make our home there.
About how many seats then?
It can seat between 35 and about 100. We're hoping to have between 50 and 70 in there.
Oh, that's perfect. Tickets are $20. You can call the box office at 612-520-1230. Again, that's 612-520-1230, or just go to uprisingtheaterco.com for tickets. It has been a pleasure meeting you, Shannon, and I do hope that we will have you on to talk about some of these others, because we cannot stop talking about gun violence. We just can't. So thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, we're going to take a break and come back with our final guest in just a moment. Welcome back. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. It is now 9:48. And by the way, if you have not been to see the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, they are doing some very unique things. I remember when my family, the Steeles, we had a chance to work with them 2 years in a row with our holiday show. That was a long time ago. We started out at the Ordway, and then we went over to the State Theater. And in between, they've been doing so much since then, since I had a chance to work with them. People still talk about them. We know how great they are. But what they're doing now is so unique, and it makes us feel like you need a unique venue for it. So this venue that we're talking about for the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra this week, as a few of their members take part in their Tapestry series, just wait till you hear about it. Paul Finkelstein is joining us. He has been with the orchestra for 5 years as their artistic planning manager. In fact, he gave up his dreams of being a tuba player, but really enjoys the role he has now. How are you, Paul?
I'm well, Geraldine. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, welcome to CCO. Look, here's the thing. When I read about what you guys are doing right now, it's creative, it's interesting, and it's different. What are people saying about the different spots you're going to play?
Well, thank you so much. It's been really amazing bringing our music to different venues around the Twin Cities, places that are known as hubs for great music, period, not just classical music, but any genre. So we've been bringing our music over the last couple seasons to some really cool places, like the Turf Club and the Ice House also in Minneapolis.
Wow.
And so we've been doing three shows per season at each, the Turf Club and the Ice House. And people who are going there know just to expect great music. And so that's the whole reason why we're going there. We want to be a part of that as well.
You know, Turf Club is what surprises me. The Ice House doesn't surprise me, although I love sure. that you're doing both of those. Because when it comes to the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, acoustics really matter. You know, yeah. I mean, you had yeah. that's why you have this whole concert hall that was built with on the Ordway, you know, to be a part of what who they are. So I'm surprised right. the Turf Club. Tell me what it means to have the acoustics that you need to make sure that people hear what it is that you need us to hear.
Well, I mean, surprisingly, at the Turf Club, we've found that the crowd, it's so intimate and you're right up on the stage there for the audience. That they actually hear the players pretty darn clearly there. And you know, we're bringing there mostly just chamber music, so works that involve eight players or fewer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get a little bit of the clinking of glasses in the background, the ice swishing with the bartenders, but it really feels like you're hearing this music, you know, in a space that you can really – you know, let your hair down, relax, and hear the music as I think most of these composers intended us to really hear this music, which is to be comfortable, to be among friends, and to feel like it's not you're not breaking rules by taking a drink or having a nice bite to eat. Also,
I love it. I absolutely love this. And so, how many members are going out to places like the Ice House and the Turf Club? In fact, the Turf Club is happening on Tuesday of this week, the 12th. So we want to let people know that. However, you are sold out.
That's right. Yeah, we are sold out for this upcoming concert on the 12th. And we do, those concerts are seated. So it's not like your typical Turf Club concert where you might have standing room only. So we can only fit about, I think, like 125 people in for the Turf Club shows.
Mm-hmm.
And those go on sale about a month in advance. So for our next one, which is in which is on June 4th, those tickets will go on sale May 4th on the Turf Club website.
And how many members do you have in the orchestra?
Yeah, so we have, right now we have about, I think, 23 full-time members of the orchestra. And so for the Turf Club concerts, typically it's around 6 to 8 members who are playing those concerts. The nice thing is not only are they getting to play at these concerts, but at all of these concerts, we encourage our musicians to take the time to really speak to the audience,
mm-hmm.
to let them know what's motivating them right now, why the works that they're playing are important to them, what it was like putting them together. And the really cool thing about this upcoming concert, you mentioned that it's part of our upcoming Tapestry Festival,
mm-hmm.
Which is a new biennial festival that we're working on, and we're building it around a theme every couple of years. And this year's theme is home, how we recognize home. So what we challenged our musicians to do for this concert was to come up with a solo work for them that reminds them of their musical home. What is a piece that for them, you know, takes them either to their home or just feels like it's you know, a comfortable but exciting piece of music for them to share with the audience. So the musicians are not only going to be playing these pieces, but taking some time to really get to explain to the audience why these pieces mean so much to them. And I think that's really important.
If you had a piece that would remind you of home, what would it be, Paul?
Oh, that's such a tough question. Oh, you know, I'm a tuba player, as you mentioned, but kind of a lapsed tuba player, if you will. There's a really wonderful Prokofiev symphony, which sounds so nerdy, but Prokofiev's Fifth Symphony is like is that big bombastic piece where the tuba gets to really shine for a big part of it, and it's in the key of B flat, and the tuba is also in the key of B flat, so it's that marriage of key an instrument that makes me feel like I'm right at home.
I can actually hear the smile in your voice. It's awesome.
I'm glad. Yeah, I'm beaming right now.
That's awesome. Okay, so people can't go and get tickets for the Turf Club. Are you adding another show?
So what we have is we have three more of these. We call them SPCO Act concerts. So we have two more shows at the Ice House, if that's more your speed and your jam, March 21st at the Ice House and May 9th at Ice House, and then June 4th at Turf Club. So we won't be adding another show of this set of repertoire, but you'll be able to hear other exciting chamber works at those concerts in March, May, and June.
I'm stuck on if that's more of your Steve, your speed and your jam. That's awesome, dude. Wow, the SPCO is changing. I love it. I love it.
Listen, you know, as part of this Tapestry Festival, we have all sorts of amazing composers that we're working with. One of them next weekend in particular in the concerts is Pavel French, who's, you know.
Pavel is fantastic. She's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
We're working with all sorts of really creative people all over the Twin Cities. The whole point of this festival, since it's about home, is that we wanted to engage, local artists in this process as well, and community members to bring them into these series of concerts. So there are actually, ten concerts happening February 11th through February 24th, both at the Ordway, obviously this one that I mentioned at the Turf Club. We have events happening at the Eastside Freedom Library.
The Eastside Freedom Library?
Correct. The Eastside Freedom Library on the east side of St. Paul.
Interesting.
There's a whole lot of exciting concerts happening that involve, I think we're doing 5 world premieres in those 10 concerts. So there's a lot of new music being written for this festival. And we're engaging composers to tell us, you know, what does home mean to them? And Pavel's piece is all about her mother, Zula Young, who unfortunately passed about 8 years ago.
Yes.
But she was a fixture in the Rondo neighborhood.
Yeah, I knew her.
So Pavel wrote a symphony for her mother that will be premiered next weekend.
Hey, now, so this is so exciting, Paul. So exciting. If people want more information, even though they can't get to the Turf Club because it's sold out, of course they can go to thespco.org. Again, thespco.org. But if they need more information, they want to find out more about the shows, is that where they should go, the website, or to get tickets?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, vspco.org. And if you'd like to learn more particularly about this festival called Tapestry, you can go to vspco.org/tapestry to learn more about that.
Congratulations. I just love this idea. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you so much, Geraldine.
All right. That is Paul Finkelstein, and he has been the orchestra, been with them for 5 years as the artistic planning manager. How about that? You know, it's really interesting. We have so many unique opportunities here in the Twin Cities to listen to the artists that listen to artists we've never heard of, or artists that we know and love, and they have absolutely changed the way they do things. That's what we do in Minnesota, and I think it's awesome. All right, we're coming up next with the Mom and Michael Hour.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.